podcast. April 1st, April Fool's Day, 2022. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, and Apple Podcasts. You could also listen to us on your smart speaker. Also, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. Visit our website, thesportscast.net, and download our app, The Sportscast. Today was the FIFA World Cup draw. The whole world was watching, even in America. Why? Because USA has qualified to the World Cup, and they're going to face a, we don't know how tough the group is, but they have England, Iran, and possibly Scotland, Wales, or Ukraine. Join us, US Men's National Team fans, Gary Franks and Asa Smith. You're here on the Sportscast. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right. I'd like to go start with Asa first. Your thoughts over the group, England, Iran, and it could be Ukraine.
It's going to be Ukraine because the geopolitics of the situation demand that this be Ukraine. Like, So I made a mistake in my prediction because obviously FIFA is corrupt as all get out. So you knew that they were going to do some weirdness. And I knew that we were going to get England and I knew we were going to get Iran. Like that was no question. When I saw Saudi get picked, I was like, oh, are we doing World War III early? Like that could be fun. But then obviously it was Ukraine because obviously. So the geopolitics of the whole thing is just, it demands it. Once Russia was not allowed to be in this World Cup, they were like, well, we'll throw Ukraine in there. And just all of the hot takes are going to be in that group and not in group A where perhaps they should be. But hey, that's not my, this is a sports thing, not a politics thing. So from an actual group perspective, I wanted England, like give me England. And Iran, like, look, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, we're through. This is easy, blah, blah, blah. It's the World Cup. Everybody's good. But and should Wales get through, which is what I would expect, you got Gareth Bale. And we do not have anybody who can handle Gareth Bale. But if you go through this, like, look, it was never going to be easy. Once you didn't get drawn into Qatar as pot one, you were going to have a team that was better than you. And England is the team that I'd like to see because guess what? They're overrated. They control soccer media. Like that's how it works. It's like, look, like I don't want to mention any teams specifically, but like if we were going to do this in a college football area, like maybe there's a school that produces a lot of people who are influential in college football media, say University of Michigan. And like maybe they get rated really highly or Texas is another example of this where it's like, oh man, they're the home of college football or soccer. Like it's the same thing. England's overrated. They're good. I'm not saying they're not good, but give me Harry Maguire. Like give me Harry Maguire against whatever center forward we have, and I promise you we'll be fine. So I'm excited. Yeah, like I'm excited. And Iran is trash. Like yeah, they're good. They're trash. If we don't beat Iran by multiple goals, I will be disappointed. And Wales is Wales. I mean, stop Gareth Bale.
Let me give you background on Iran before we get to Garrett. Iran won the Asia Confederation qualifying. They were number one over Korea. So a little background there. Garrett, your thoughts on the group? Was announced a few minutes ago. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so this group is definitely kind of what all USMNT fans wanted. You know, we've obviously seen Group of Deaths before, and while we've made our way through, it's just not always the fun lead up of, oh my God, we got to play Germany and Belgium. Are you serious? But I think this is a good U.S. friendly draw. Obviously, England, I won't say they're overrated, but I do think they do get a little overinflated because of, like you said, soccer media is kind of run by England. But still, like Harry Kane terrifies me going against Chris Richards, Miles Robinson, Walker Zimmerman, even though they're great center backs, still terrifies me. Iran, the thing is with Iran, it kind of concerns me, is that we're right there at Qatar. They're probably going to have a huge group of fans there. And we've seen our guys play down to lesser competition in really hostile environments. You saw it this past a few days ago in Panama, in Costa Rica. We saw it in Panama. We saw it in Jamaica. We saw it in teams that are nowhere near as talented as Iran, and we still struggle to get results because of hostile crowds. So that concerns me a little bit. Wales, like you said, it'd be hilarious if we had, of course, we'd get like Ukraine, but I see Wales probably going through. Scotland would be the dream one because I'm going to be honest, I don't know much about Scotland, but I know we'd probably be fine with them.
Was Scotland the easiest from the three?
Scotland would be the easiest. Yeah. They're a whole bunch of players. It's like their best player is Scott McTominay. And that is everything you need to know about that.
Okay.
Well, it's actually, I'm joking. It's actually Andrew Robertson, but if your best player is a left back, unless you're Canada, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. As Gary was saying, we'll first finish your thought first and then we'll move on to the next segment. Sorry about that.
You're all good. This U.S. team is going to be what's pivotal for this U.S. team isn't necessarily the draw, because I think regardless of the draw, the next few months are going to be absolutely pivotal for this team. What's Nations League roster going to look like? Are we going to keep some of our Euro guys back to let them train, get ready to get in form? Or are we going to bring in younger guys, or are we going to have like an MLS selection team with Jesse Zardes and Sebastian Legette and Jack Steele? We really don't know with Greg. It's just, you never know. What's really going to be interesting is watching Greg go up against Jared Southgate. That is just something that I'm terrified for, but I'm so excited to see just how that happens. I think England's going to just English snobbery. I just knowing them, they're going to try to go out there and run against us. They're not going to try to set in a low block. They're going to try to go out there and try to get us in transition. And then that's where you've seen US be successful. Go back and look at the Panama game. Panama decided they wanted to go out and play aggressive as possible. And it really hurt them, as you saw early on with two penalties. And then we obviously just kind of went through them, but it'll be really interesting to see how England goes about it. Iran. Yeah. I think if we play the way we should beat them, but it seems like we at times play down to our competition and then up to our competition. So like good example, Nations League. I think that Mexican roster was probably a little bit more talented than the roster we had out there, but we played up to them and we ended up winning. And then we definitely see with Gold Cup, the Gold Cup roster was about a B or C squad and we played up and we obviously beat them. And now I think we're at the point where I think we've surpassed Mexico in talent, but it's still nonetheless, I think it's something that we play up or down to our competition. So will it help that we have an easier group? Absolutely. But I'm also a little concerned about some American complacency, because as we saw, I think we definitely went to Panama a few months ago with way too much cockiness and we got beat because of a Jesse Zardes own goal. And then I think we came in complacent to Costa Rica this past week.
So I just want to touch on that. We are better playing against the ball, because that's all. I mean, America generally, historically has played well against the ball. This cycle, we've played well against the ball. We don't do great when we have the lion's share of the possession. And part of that is because we have never had a full roster. I mean, when we've had even on the right flank, when we have Dest, Musa, and Wea all on the field together, we smoke teams. Regardless of whether we have the ball or we don't, it's just that's happened twice ever. So I think like when you look at this roster and you look at this draw, and plus we actually have a huge benefit because we're so young. This 8 months is huge. I mean, you think about 8 months ago from where we are now, Yunus Musa wasn't playing like this, Weston McKennie went from a guy who was very good and maybe could be something more to our best player, right? You had Gio Reyna spend six of the last 8 months hurt, and he's coming out there looking super Saiyan.
Not to mention Luca De La Torre wasn't even on the roster.
Right. We did. Luca De La Torre was not a thing. Jackson Yule was, Sebastian Legette was part of this. Like there's just so many changes, back then Brandon Aaronson was an eight and not playing well. So I think that the next 8 months, like you said, Garrett, is huge. I think Nations League is going to be fringe roster spots. I don't think you'll see Christian. I don't think you'll see Gio, but I do think you'll see John Brooks. I do think you'll see Joe Scally. I think you'll see it like guys who you say to yourself, can they do a job? I'm optimistic that John Brooks will be on the roster because he can do something that nobody else can really do. I'm optimistic that we'll see some rotation over the summer. But, again, going back to this draw, Gareth Southgate and the attacking talent of England, they have too much pride to play in a low block against us. Mm-hmm. And I'm cool with it. Look, Kyle Walker is a better right back than anybody we've seen. He's better than anybody in CONCACAF. He's better than what we have. I mean, Kyle Walker is better, and Reece James are better than Sergiño Dest, but they can be had. I mean, they get forward and we can, I mean, look, Kyle Walker is good, but Kyle Walker, I think it was Kyle Walker, or his battery mate, João Cancelo, said like, who's the hardest winger you've had to play against in your career? And the answer was Christian.
Mm.
And so like, when you get into it, like, yeah, like they've got good guys. They've got a lot of talent, but they also have Harry Maguire. So, okay. Like, okay.
One thing that really interests me with Christian is, like, obviously he goes over to Europe and plays incredible Champions League, plays great in domestic cups, plays great in league play. Then he comes over here and you can tell, I think at times he gets rattled with just the whole atmosphere of CONCACAF. And we all know CONCACAF is just unlike anywhere in the world when it comes to qualifying. So I'm really interested to see him play in a more kind of contained environment to where, okay, he's a little bit more comfortable. You're not having fans running on the pitch at times, trying to steal balls. It's a little bit more contained, a little bit more controlled environment. And I'm really interested to see how he excels in that, because he plays great at home. We all know that he plays great at home because there are a little bit more controlled environments. And so that's something I'm definitely looking for. But yeah, the fringe roster spots, that's going to be so important. I think I read an Athletic article done by those guys, and they're awesome if you haven't read their stuff. But I think it was like there's like 9 spots still really up for grabs, because obviously like guys like Weston, Pulisic, all those guys are locked in. But it's going to be interesting to see, can a Daryl DK break in? Can a Josh Sargent come back in? John Brooks, I'm a little less optimistic about him getting a spot. I hope he does. I think he deserves it, but we'll see, because you know how Greg is.
Yeah, my theory on John Brooks is that he kicked Greg's dog. Like, there's no other explanation. Like something happened between those two, and like mm-hmm. It is what it is.
I will say, I was at the US Canada game, very first USMNT game, awesome experience. But I remember looking over and seeing John Brooks just staring at Greg for half the match, and like, I'm not going to be the one to defend Greg here, but also like, you got to know when to not do stuff. And considering he didn't have a good window, I understand why Greg dropped him the next one, but I still think it's petty on both sides. I think this is just kind of children at a schoolyard.
Yeah. And the thing is with John Brooks and Greg Berhalter, like I've spoken on this on my podcast, which I'm going to promote for a second. Listen to my Absolutely. Podcast. Hey, but the thing is with Berhalter, and you've seen it a little bit, is that he prizes cohesive chemistry and a certain type of chemistry. Mm-hmm. If you've coached or played at any sort of like level above middle school, there are certain people who believe that chemistry is hunky-dory happiness. And there are certain people who believe that chemistry is accountability without pettiness. And I think that Berhalter is in the former camp. So when you see players play with a certain edge, a certain swagger, a certain anger to them and calling people out, Greg doesn't like it. The only player who gets away with it is Gio, because Gio is, you can't drop him. He's too mm-hmm. good. But Brooks is a in-your-face accountability. Matthew Hoppe was another one. Matthew Hoppe was the best player on that Gold Cup roster, attacking-wise anyways. Mm-hmm. And we haven't seen him since. Now, granted, he's got his club situation, needs to get settled, whatever. But Hoppe is not someone that Berhalter wants to bring in, because he can get away with not doing it. The rest of the guys, if you look at the guys, like the book on them, is they're all really like relatively nice guys. Like everybody's like sort of like happy and upbeat, except for Gio, who is again undroppable and sort of a twerp. I love him, but he's like a villain. And
I'm 21, and in 19 I was a little tyrant. So like, yeah, I totally understand why Gio's like that.
If you told me, I'm in my 30s. If you told me at the age of 19 I was going to be the most like a millionaire playing a game, and my dad was like royalty in the sport in my country, yeah, I'd be impossible to. Like it is what it is. And Gio's great. Like, I love Gio, and he plays with an edge that I think we need. But he's really the only guy on the team who gets away with it. Nobody mm-hmm. else really yells at each other outside of, like, Christian gets exasperated sometimes. But you look mm-hmm. up and down the roster, like Weston's happy-go-lucky, maybe a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. Tyler's happy-go-lucky, Moose's happy-go-lucky. Like, Dest is I say this with so much respect, a clown. Like, Jedi literally has himself named after Star Wars. Like, the rest of them are just like sort of happy guys. And then you have Gio, and Brooks is very much the accountability. Like, if you screw up, he's going to tell you. But the flip side of that is that I've seen people yell at him, and he doesn't sulk. He doesn't put his head down. He takes mm-hmm. it and he goes on, because that's the way that I think he learned to be accountable, and he learned mm-hmm. How chemistry works. And I mean, look, I've seen it work both ways. I don't really have an opinion, but it's very clear that Berhalter does.
Mm-hmm. I think Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish the thought, and then we'll go on to the next segment.
Sounds good. I think one thing that's super interesting is seeing how these guys who didn't really necessarily grow up in America, who play for the national team, such as John Brooks, react to a guy like Christian, or not Christian more so, but a guy like Weston McKennie or Chris Richards, who did come up. It's so interesting to see how it's, you know, once again, a little bit more happy-go-lucky, just, oh, like, we're having fun playing a game. And then John Brooks is like, we're playing for my life. And I think that speaks to just the different soccer culture there is in America compared to like a Germany, compared to just anywhere else around the world. Because, I mean, I know Mexico, they're trying to fire their manager, and they had an excellent camp by all accounts, going 28 points and finishing second. And they're trying to get Tata out of there. And we're 25 points, and it seems like, and you know, we lost some games that we probably shouldn't have. And everyone's like, oh, like Berhalter, or at least the national media is like, oh, we love Berhalter. He's a genius.
You can say Matt Doyle. It's fine. I don't think he's going to watch this. It's fine.
Yeah. He's a
controversial at Matt Doyle.
At Matt Doyle.
So
Great Wall.
So we got 8 months, guys. Preparation. We haven't played many teams outside of the CONCACAF region. Asa, what type of games you want to put up against the U.S. before the World Cup to play a Germany, you know, some type of, internationally.
So there were a couple of rumors that Argentina is going to play both Mexico and America. That'd be great. I would love to play in Argentina. I'm going to give you a hot take here. And it's not going to be necessarily widely held. I think friendlies are overrated. I don't think that they prepare you for anything. I think that they're cardio. Especially with this team, we've seen these players play in serious matches and we've seen them play friendlies. Again, Sergiño Dest does not play defense in friendlies. We've seen him in, I think, 5 friendlies now. He doesn't play defense. And look, like, I want the guys playing. I want them to get match fit. I want, you know, whatever. But you watch the team the way that they played against Costa Rica, right? It was a full lineup. They were tired. And when you're tired in a game like this, and you're going to be tired in a soccer match that's 90 minutes and intense, you don't always give that extra burst, right? Like, you don't always go all the way. So I, you know, look, would I love to see us play Germany and Spain and Argentina and Brazil? And, you know, I would like to see us play like a obviously not Wales or Scotland, but, you know, a team of that sort of range. I mean, Israel gave Scotland 2 good matches like that. That might be a good one. They play in a similar style to England, but significantly worse. You know, like with that 5 back, like, yeah, that could be useful. But the thing that you want to do, the thing that I want to see between now and Thanksgiving or Black Friday, when we play England or whenever that timing is, I want to see the players that we have committing to playing at the highest levels. So what I'm concerned about is that our number one striker doesn't play for his club right now. Ricardo Pepi does not play for his club. Jesus Ferreira is our number 2, and he's not a striker. So if we're going to be playing in this sort of vague false 9 with Jesus Ferreira, that's fine. But I want him getting 2,000 minutes between now and then. And if Pepi is going to be part of this roster, he needs to get on the field. And look, I'm cool with Josh Sargent being the other center forward if he's playing, you know, 1,500 minutes in the championship after Norwich gets relegated. I'm cool with that. But we need to have these guys playing, and we need to have them progressing, because where we are now is not where we need to be. You know, I in that first sort of section, I was pretty confident. But the fact of the matter is that this team, as currently constructed and as currently talent-wise, we are the second or third best, and it'll be a fight. But if we get to where we can be, and that's up and down the roster, I feel very confident.
Garrett Franks, Asa mentioned strikers. One issue that we have had, maybe an issue, is goalkeeping. 2 of our top goalkeepers are a backup. We do have Horvath, but what are your thoughts over the goalkeeper situation with the U.S.?
Yeah, I mean, really our top 5, I mean, if you want to include Gaga and Sean Johnson, I don't see them included in this next roster. We actually have seen Ethan Horvath get some minutes. I believe the guy over him got a red card. So he was out 3 matches, and Horvath played fairly well. I think he had 2 clean sheets or something like that. So that's very encouraging to see. Matt Turner is kind of weird because he's hurt right now, and it's kind of in limbo because he's going to go to Arsenal. You know, we really don't know yet with that when he's going to be moving over. And then obviously Stefan does not play for his club unless it's like a domestic cup, like FA Cup. I have some concerns about Zach Stefan long-term. I really do. And not, you know, he seems like a great guy, but his injuries, that's just not good. I mean, we saw him getting hurt against Panama. he was freaking me out then during the game. And I believe he went, he got hurt at one point. We were up only 1-0. So it was a little like, oh my gosh, what's going on here? And I just, there's something about him. He makes some wonderful saves. He makes decisions that are so smart. And then he'll do something so mind-numbingly dumb, like run 20 yards out of the box. And you're like, what on earth were you thinking? Like, and cause goals. So I'm not sure if I'm fully sold on him. Quarterback, I think maybe overall my favorite, but once again, he's still kind of getting back into getting a lot of minutes. And I wish we saw him at least once this camp. I was in the camp of starting him versus Mexico to Greg Berhalter's credit. He started Stefan and Stefan played fairly well, I thought. And I thought that was the right, after the game, I thought that was the right call. But I still would have loved to have seen Horvat play, at least get to Costa Rica, let him get some experience, get some more experience out there. And then Matt Turner, I think Matt Turner may be our best overall like shot stopper, but the issue with him, he can't play with his feet. And that's one thing that I noticed against Mexico that really helped us with Stefan. Stefan would be able to tell everyone, get behind the half line, and he just booted that far. And then we could start actually setting up our offense and getting a little transition going. And we just won't get that with Turner. You look at Canada, the first goal against Canada when we played up there was because of Matt Turner's poor play with his feet. So they all have drawbacks and they all have additions, but I will say this, I would much rather have our goalkeeping situation than what something like Mexico does or what other nations in CONCACAF have, because I'd still take our three guys versus many clubs or many nations. Now, if you told me in 8 months that, you know, if you honestly told me in 8 months, first game, England, we're starting either Matt Turner, Ethan Horvat, or Stack Stefan, and you said like, oh, we're starting this guy, I'm like, okay, understand. And I think that's not necessarily great at this point. Hopefully Nations League, I assume Stefan will not be in that camp if they do kind of call more of a B, C roster, just get some French guys in. I want to see what Horvat has to offer. I want to see more of him. I really love his game. I want to see more of Matt Turner. Heck, Gaga Salina. I'm not saying he starts or even makes the roster, but I want to see more of Gaga Salina. I really love his game. And only 17 years old.
Dude, I
absolutely.
I was going to say that if you told me where I thought you were going with this was if you told me that Gaga was our starting keeper in Qatar, I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Was okay. Zach Steffen always hurt? We never know. He may be our third guy.
So I have a theory on Zach Steffen that I want to present to you guys. Okay. And I mentioned it on our last podcast, which was the recap of the Costa Rica game. I had had a couple of beverages, but I've thought it through now and I feel good about this. I think he gets bored. I think Zach Steffen gets bored in goal, because if you watch him, you'll see like he's a little bit antsy, right? Like it's not that he's uncomfortable. It's just, he's like always sort of like looking around, moving, walking, whatever. And the Scuffed Pod, which is a very good podcast. They're great folks. They call it, he goes down these like walkabouts. That's the phrase they use. And he just like sort of like leaves goal and goes and tries to do things. And after his injuries, he's not the athletic marvel he once was. So he's, instead of collecting crosses like a wide receiver, he's fumbling them. He's not getting them. That's how Costa Rica got that second goal. Now, granted, had he caught it, it would have been a great play. But the fact of the matter is that he's just, you know, back injuries are weird, right? Like back injuries will rob you of everything. Larry Bird went from the best player in the NBA to retired because of a back injury. It affects everything you do. And I wonder about that with Stefan. You know, we don't see him game in, game out, because, you know, hey, get that bag. I'm not telling you not to. But he doesn't play game in, game out. And you know, I think in a tournament like the World Cup, his distribution matters, because the difference between the shot stopping between Turner and Stefan is not great enough that it's going to show up in, I think, 3, 4, 5 games. I mean, hopefully 5 games. But I think that if he's not healthy, the flipping a coin between this version of Stefan, that version of Turner, Horvat, such as he is, and honestly, Gaga is just like, okay, whatever. I mean, I hope Gaga like gets released from fire and plays in the U20 qualification. That'd be awesome. But I mean, the difference between 1 and 4, as far as I'm concerned, is minimal. I don't want to see Sean Johnson. You don't get to give up 5 goals in Central America and then play for the national team. There are rules. I'm sorry.
So Asa, if you're a Berhalter, who do you think he'll choose for goalkeeper 1? He has to solidify this position.
It's Stefan. It's Stefan. He likes Stefan. It's Stefan. I mean, look, I think Berhalter part of this is that, I mean, and look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not a tinfoil hat guy. I'm a little bit of tinfoil hat guy, but like, where did Berhalter most recently manage it at his club? It was Columbus.
Columbus Crew. Yep.
Where did Stefan come up?
Columbus.
There's a relationship there. Berhalter's a trust guy. You saw it because players like Sebastian Legette were on the roster far, far later than they should have been. Christian Roldan is still on the roster. He doesn't play, but he's there, right? And I think that Berhalter has baby blankets. There are certain players that he trusts to do the job in the way that he wants them to do it. And I think Stefan is his guy. And until and unless Stefan gets hurt, it's his job to lose. I think that he probably should have lost it throughout qualifying. But if I'm Berhalter, not me, if I'm Berhalter, it's Stefan until it's not. And it's not when Gaga Slonina dethrones David De Gea and is the keeper for Manchester United for the next decade and a half.
Garrett, how about you? Who is your goalkeeper one? Of course, who is your goalkeeper number one?
Yeah, I go Stefan. I think overall he's probably the safest bet, if that makes sense. Once again, if injuries, we don't know. Like with injuries, I mean, he could tweak something going up a plane, like going on the way to Qatar. We really never know with Zach Stefan. My number two, though, I'd go with Ethan Horvat. I just think he's a little bit more of a complete than Matt Turner. If he's playing. Now, if he's not playing at club level, then obviously you move Turner in that way. But at that point, we don't know if Turner's even going to be playing. We don't know if
he could get loaned out, right, Asa?
Yeah.
He's not going to get loaned out. Based on follow Touchy Gooners. They are associated with our podcast. They're the Touchline Frock. They're over in England. Turner is being brought in. This isn't an Austin Trusty situation where it's just like he's going to Arsenal. No, he's not. Turner is there to be their cup goalie. He's going to be their FA Cup, their Carabao Cup. And should they get to Europe and not Champions League, like if it's Champions League, he won't be playing. But if it's Europa League or Conference League, which as a Spurs fan, I hope it is, he'll be playing there. So I think the thing with Turner, if he does go to Arsenal and he does stay there, which seems to be the plan, it's going to be a question because then he's not playing more than Stefan. And then you get into a situation where it's like, okay, you've got Ethan Horvath playing in the championship. Maybe you've got two guys playing for big six clubs, top six clubs who aren't playing. And then you've got Gaga Slonina hanging out in Chicago. And look, I'm not saying Gaga's going to start or even be on the bus. I don't think he is. But it's something to monitor. You know, you want your guys playing. And if none of our guys are playing, it sort of ties your hands.
Well, there you have it. That is USA analysis 8 months before the World Cup begins in November. Let's go into the other groups. Group A, Qatar, Ecuador, Senegal, Netherlands. Garrett, who do you think will come out the top two?
Yeah, I think this one's pretty cut and dry. I think Group A is pretty weak. I think Netherlands and Senegal go through this one. I know Ecuador has kind of had a resurgence as of late, but I still got Senegal going up through there with Netherlands.
Asa?
No argument.
Okay. All right.
So there we go.
I mean, like, I don't have additional analysis to that because Qatar is bad and Ecuador, like, is getting there, but like.
Well, Qatar made it into deep in the Gold Cup, I believe. They went to the semi.
Yeah. CONCACAF is not very good.
Finals. Okay. There you go. All right. Group B, Asa, top two, will be USA.
America and England will get through.
Garrett,
fully agree. USA beats England on day after Thanksgiving.
Wow!
America has never lost to England. America has never lost to England in a competitive match.
Wasn't it 1954? 1954 beat them in the World Cup, and it's considered one of their biggest 50. Yep. Yeah, it's considered one of their biggest embarrassments in all of soccer, which is just incredible.
And that's why we call it soccer because we won that match, and they've never won it back from us. It's not football; it's soccer.
I did not know that.
Them's the rules. That's actually not.
Now, no matter who comes in, Scotland, Wales, or Ukraine, USA will finish top two.
I mean, short of Gareth Bale doing some Gareth Bale shit stuff. Sorry.
It's okay.
Wales has the best player in the group. Gareth Bale is better than anybody else, but they're also, you know, rolling out there with like Ben Davis and Joe Rodon. Like it's not that great.
All right. There you go. We'll see what happens. The playoff is just June, I believe, or before. Group C. Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Poland. Garrett, what's going to happen there? Will the Mexicans come out alive again?
So obviously we're just going to say Argentina goes through. You know what? I'm just saying because Lewandowski is incredible and Saudi Arabia, I'm just not going to count him. Like, I'm glad they're there, but no. Mexico, I just have a feeling that this team is going to play. They love Tata. They love Tata, regardless of what their fan and media thinks. These players love Tata. And you saw it after Chucky Lasagna scored against in their last match, going over to hug him, showing basically support. I have Mexico going through. I know Mexico's – this is probably the worst Mexico roster we've seen in a bit. But just I feel like they're going to play really strong for Tata.
Asa, Poland has Lewandowski, but who do you have top two of Group C?
So the difference between Garrett and I is that Garrett is trying to do sober, reasonable analysis, and I'm a troll. So not only is Mexico not coming out, they're going to lose to Saudi, and they are not going to get a point. They're going 0-4. They're going home crying. At me, Eltree. At me. My Twitter handle's right there.
Eltree.
So you have Argentina and
Poland. Yeah, I mean, if you actually want actual analysis here. I think Lewandowski is really, really good. And Mexico's midfield is not what it was. Ache is not the same guy he was. Guardado is not the same guy he was. So if you're looking at it, you're asking Edson Álvarez to do a ton. And he's good, but he's not Lewandowski good. So with that center back pairing of I assume by then it'll be Vasquez and Araujo. They're just not good enough, right? Like it's that's what it comes down to. And obviously Argentina is significantly better, but so then you get into a question of can they draw against Poland? And I just don't see them controlling the midfield well enough to keep Lewandowski off the score sheet twice.
Group D, France, intercontinental playoff between Australia, UAE or Peru, Denmark or Tunisia. Garrett, who you got?
Give me France and Denmark. France, obviously, one of the most talented teams in all the nation. Denmark's actually a team that I'm going to be rooting a good bit for because of Christian Eriksen. It's such an incredible story. I remember watching Euros when that whole situation happened. Just love Christian Eriksen. And this can be a little biased, but I have them going through. But I also don't think Tanzania or the playoff team is going to do much in that.
Not even Peru. Asa, what's going to happen in Group D?
So I have the same outcome, but I do want to take this opportunity to say that Christian Eriksen, no player in my mind has gone from like loved to hated to loved as quickly as Christian Eriksen. So I'm a Spurs fan. And when he was at Spurs, I mean, wow. Like he's probably my second or third favorite Spurs player who I've ever watched. It's like, you know, Gareth Bale, Christian Eriksen, Sonny, like is some combination of that three. And then he left, and he left because he wanted to leave. And it was like all of these players leaving Spurs because they want to leave is it hurts. But the way that he sort of things have happened and the things that he said about Spurs and the positivity sort of back and forth. I think Denmark is through because they're very, very good. And I think France short of something wild. Is through and through to the semis. I mean, I don't see many teams who can beat France's U23 team, let alone
the senior. The incumbent winner usually chokes in the next World Cup. Do you think this will happen, or France is a whole different story?
I mean, you're talking to someone who picked Baylor to get to the Final Four, so I don't know anything. Still bitter about that, by the way.
Well, we'll see what happens. Group E, Spain, Costa Rica or New Zealand for that playoff, Germany or Japan. Garrett, what do you think is going to happen?
This is my hot take. The big hot take is incoming. Germany goes through. I think Germany washes the pain of 2018 off and they go through. But give me Japan. And the reason I say that is because Spain's going to want to hold the possession the entire game. And I just have a feeling Japan's going to have one or two guys be able to slip the cracks, similar to how Germany lost against South Korea back in the last World Cup. And be able to get a goal or two that Spain's not going to be able to answer. Give me Japan, big upset. Spain's going to go through kind of what what Germany had to go through after 18.
I love it. Number 15 seed. Asa, what's going to happen? Group E, Costa Rica, you have hopes or?
I do have hopes for Costa Rica. I'm the same as Garrett. I think that Spain is a paper tiger. They rely so much on Sergio Busquets being brilliant, and he's old. And but I don't think Japan is going to get through. I'm going to go with the best keeper in the history of freaking soccer, apparently, Keylor Navas and Costa Rica to get humiliated in the round of 16. Tim Howard versus Belgium style. But I do think Costa Rica ekes through because I don't think that they're going to concede many goals. So I think that their goal differential after winning one, tying one, losing one is going to be enough to get them through.
Costa Rica will grind it out again. New Zealand out again. Group F, Belgium, Canada, Morocco, Croatia. Garrett, the Canadians are, we're in the pot three, which I thought was surprising, but you know, there's a mathematical reason for that. What's going to happen in Group F?
Yeah, this Canadian squad is one of the hottest teams, not only in CONCACAF, but the world. Belgium's going to get through. Lukaku, too much talent. But I think this Croatia side is going to kind of have a hangover considering the last one. Mordrick is kind of is getting up there in age. This Canadian squad is hungry. They remind me a lot of that 0-2 U.S. squad. Really hungry, really just kind of filled with some piss and vinegar. You know, they want to go out there and tell you how we're going to beat you, and then they're going to beat you. Alphonso Davies is honestly probably one of my favorite players in CONCACAF. He's just such a solid player and seems like a great guy. Tejan Buchanan's a great player. And they just overall, I can't remember their keeper's name, but just – him playing in sweatpants was the funniest thing.
Broja,
one of the two. Yeah, he's a really quality keeper. Really quality keeper, and I think he can cause some problems for teams. Give me Canada and Belgium through.
Canada, Belgium. Asa, do you agree or disagree?
So I agree. The first thing is that when a keeper plays in sweatpants and you lose to him, you remember his name because that's getting stunted on, right? Like it's like if you've ever gone to the gym and played basketball against someone in jeans, if they beat you, you're going to remember it. It's not a good day. So I think Belgium's through. Obviously they're supremely talented. And they'll lose, you know, early in the knockouts because they're the Gonzaga of soccer, but
do they have Hazard?
Which one?
Eden.
You mean the second best Hazard? Yeah, they'll probably have him. Okay. He's the second best Hazard. What are we talking about here?
I'm not gonna argue.
I think that the reports were that it was like a 4-month recovery, so he should be ready by September, October. He'll be in form. So you don't leave him home, especially since if you leave him home, you might leave the actual good Hazard. But I think Canada, so since Canada has the best striker ever born in America, in Jonathan David, just as a side point, how great would it be if he,
oh my goodness,
forever? Anyways, I think Canada is really, really hot, but at the end of the day, they are not strong in the midfield. They're super strong on the flanks and they're super strong up top. They're not strong in the midfield and they are not strong at the back. And I think that Croatia, despite being a little bit older, despite being sort of, not quite what they were, I do think that they handle it. And I do think that it's Belgium, Croatia.
Group G, the Samba Kings, Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, Cameroon. This looks like an easy group for Brazil. Garrett, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. Brazil is going to come out there and give it all they got, obviously. Neymar, regardless of his age, is still Neymar. He's still going to just absolutely embarrass someone and have some highlight reel play that ESPN pushed for the next 8 years on their Instagram. I see Serbia getting through. I see this kind of a cut and dry. Switzerland, decent squad, but I don't see them getting past them. Cameroon. They did, but I don't know. I just don't see it. I think Serbia has a lot more talent. I think the way they got in, kind of barely getting in through automatic qualification. I don't know. I really like the Serbia squad, watching them play little. I have them in Brazil.
Asa, who are the suspects for Group G?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be Brazil, and don't ask me why. I don't have a reason. I think that Cameroon is going to come out. I think that there's always one squad that like plays differently, right? So like if you look at Brazil, Serbia, Switzerland, Brazil, you know how they're going to play, and Serbia and Switzerland are both play more or less the same sort of European tough type of ball. Styles make fights, and African nations, Cameroon included, they play differently, right? Like conferences play differently. I go back to this sort of, in college football a ton, but like playing a team from the Big 12 is not the same as playing a team from the Big 10 or the SEC. Even teams that want to play like a Big Ten team, like Iowa State, they're going to play you differently because of necessity, right? You don't build your team to win the World Cup. You build your team to win your conference. And I think that the African teams have historically caused a lot of trouble for sort of slower plodding European teams. And I'm not seeing a lot of speed on Switzerland or Serbia. So I think Cameroon runs over them. I think that they can do it.
Cameroon, who beat out Ivory Coast, one of the African favorites. So we'll see what happens. Group H, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, and Korea. That looks like a group of death. Garrett, do you agree? And what's going to happen?
I wouldn't necessarily call it the group of death. This is definitely one that is tough. There's a lot of tough. I feel like either this year's draw is either you got a super tough one and have fun, good luck, or it's like, okay, this isn't the worst thing ever. Like we can get through this. For me, I think Portugal, I think Ronaldo. I just can't see Ronaldo and possibly his last World Cup not get past to the knockout stage. This pick, the second pick for me, though, that this is really hard.
I told you.
I think I'm going to go with – I just love that they're all from different parts of the world, and I think that makes it such an intriguing matchup. I'd probably go with Uruguay, though. Uruguay had, you know, Luis Suarez, excuse me. I think they'll probably get through just that South American play. So I can see them going well up against a Korea and a Ghana, but I see Ghana, Korea and Uruguay going down. It's like the last day. I feel like that's gonna be a really fun group to watch.
If Cavani's still with Man United, Asa, Group H, what do you think about that group? Is it the group of death, and who's your top two?
So, I mean, such as group of death, such as it is, I think it's the toughest group, I think. I'll say this first. This is going to be Cristiano Ronaldo's last World Cup because I don't think that he's going to be allowed in the United States of America. Look it up. Why? I'm not going to talk about it. Google it.
Yep.
Probably not allowed in the United States. I think this is it for Cristiano. Unless he's cut some sort of he got game style deal to get his son to commit to playing for America. His son was born in San Diego.
Or he hires Deshaun Watson lawyers.
Or that.
I'm kidding.
Great. Anyways, I think that Portugal will be through just because they're talented as all get out and Cristiano can do stuff. I'm going to go with South Korea because, like Garrett said, I think that this is a coin flip and Sonny plays for South Korea. And
you're a Hotspur fan. Know? No coincidence.
I'm a Tottenham fan. Yeah. I mean, I am never going to look at a World Cup draw and think that Ghana is not going to get through because I'm a beaten puppy about that.
They're always a dark horse.
It's miserable because they've ruined so many happy moments in my life by being good. I think that it's going to be South Korea. I think that they're a tough squad. I think that they're a lot better than people think. Like I mean, Sonny is the headliner, but I think that they are a very solid squad. And I think that they will be, I think they'll be a pain and I think they'll get through in like Garrett said, like the on a goal differential type deal.
Hey, I'd rather have England than Ghana every day and twice on Sunday. Well, there you have it. Qatar World Cup begins November 21st through December 18th. The U.S. has a game on Black Friday for Thanksgiving. I mean, after Thanksgiving, first game, against that Euro qualifier playoff thing on the 21st of November, then Black Friday, the 25th, and the 29th against Iran, which is a little bit easier because Iran is, well, we don't know. Anyways, we'll see what happens. World Cup, 8 more months. We got a few games to prepare for, and hopefully the U.S. will come out on top or second. Asa, what is the best way to reach you online?
So I have my Twitter handle in the name here. I don't know if that's showing up, but at @TLS_N_TDS. We're on YouTube. We post videos and such. We are on podcasts, Touchlines and Touchdowns. We release twice a week. I should know. I edit. We have some fun guests coming up. This next episode is our 100th episode. So it's like sort of a clip show, but after that we have Michael Felder, who you might know from the Hand in the Dirt pod or from the Shutdown Fullcast. He'll be coming on. Vince from Scuffed will be on to preview the NFL draft. Yeah, we're just sort of keeping going. We also have our Nerdcast where we talk about Harry Potter because we are a very austere and serious sports podcast. So sometimes we get bored and talk about nerd stuff.
That's awesome. Garrett Franks, I met you at one of the Twitter spaces from Wallace. And first time we met, you're freaking amazing. You're like, I just got into soccer. You're really into soccer. Tell us what is the best way to reach you and who is your Premier League club?
Oh, okay. I'm going to shock some people with that one. So reach me on Twitter, Garrett_Franks. Also feel free to, I am the student sports director at our student radio station at the University of Alabama, Roll Tide. Follow us at WVUA FM, support student radio. It's awesome. It's my favorite medium of sport of media. My favorite Premier League club, and this is going to sound so silly, but I think I've grown to love this little team, Southampton. Southampton's my team. It's sad, I know, but I love James Ward-Prowse. I love Kyle Walker-Peters. They're so likable, such a good team. They're mid-table. Like, you know, we almost got relegated a few years back, but you know, I really like them. They're good players. It's all my friends chose better teams. I was like, you know, I'm going to be different. Chose Southampton. And I've grown to really like them and own a few kits of them. So
there you have it. Rather than choosing one of like the big clubs in Europe, choosing a club like that.
Yeah.
Is a better than the usuals. Anyways, you can reach us at thesportscast.net or on Twitter, thesportscast1. The World Cup is on the Sportscast. We'll be watching, following, tweeting, and we'll see what happens. The most exciting times. Interesting intersection, right, Asa, with the NFL and the World Cup. Like to see what happens there.
So someone pointed out like, oh, there's going to be no football on Black Friday. And to that person, I say, that is Nebraska-Iowa erasure, and we will not stand for it. Also, the Egg Bowl